And we're holding on Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis by the first Mishnah. Mishnah says, Hamotzi Zevel L'Rishos Rabim. A person takes out waste to Rishos Rabim. He wants to keep it there, and people will trample on it, animals will trample on it, and whatever, and therefore now eventually it'll be usable, and it'll rot to the extent where now it's usable as fertilizer. So the Mishnah says hamotzi motzi. When he takes it out, v'amizabel mizabel, and then when he fertilizes, he's going to fertilize, meaning in other words he can't leave it there for any length of time, but when he wants to put it out there, but he has to right away take it away, and otherwise he's going to be chayev for any nezek that it causes. So the implication would be that we're talking about at the time. Now there is a time of year when people usually do that kind of thing. When it's a time of year when not particularly during the summer, when the roads are supposed to be dry and relatively clean, then we're talking about that not then. But even then, when he puts it out there, he can only put it out there for a little bit. Which the Gemara is going to contrast that with a different Gemara elsewhere that says differently. Tosfos on the other hand explains that no, we're actually talking about over here shaloi b'shas etzatzas volume. We're talking about a time when it's not normal to be putting out your fertilizer. That is why the Mishnah is saying that you don't have so Tosfos actually gives two possibilities. One is that we're talking about shaloi b'shas etzatzas volume, and therefore that's why you have to remove it right away. The other possibility is that we're talking about b'shas etzatzas volume, that it is during the time when you're normally taking them out. But nevertheless, then you still, you still should take it away right away. And according to that, the Mishnah may not be telling us a din so much, but rather more an Eitzah Tova to remove it as soon as possible before it causes hezek. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Ein shodin tit b'rishos harabim. You're not allowed to soak clay in rishos harabim. Meaning Rashi describes just that. There are places where people make clay and then they pile it in a place for a while. So you can't do that in Rishos Rabim. But in Loivnim Levenim, and you're not allowed to make bricks. Where Rashi describes the way you'd make bricks is you would put a layer of clay on the ground, then you would make lines in it according to the shape of the bricks. And then you'd leave them to dry, and eventually, after they dry, then you cut them apart along the lines, and there are your bricks. So you can't do that because then you're really denying the area in Rishos Rabim for a while to people who would want to walk there. Avo Goyvlin tit Rishos Rabim. Now, what you are allowed to do, you're not allowed to soak the clay there in Rishos Rabim, but you are allowed to knead it. So you take the clay out and you knead it in Rishos Rabim, which you might want to do just because you need a big open area to do it. And Rishos Rabim is practically speaking a big open area to do that. So you are allowed to do that because that you're not doing for very long. You're not allowed to make bricks over there. So first the Mishnah had talked about spreading out the clay and making lines in it in order that eventually those will become bricks. He was saying you're not even allowed to knead clay in Rishos Rabim, that's going to be used for bricks. One point is that the Pharisee Israel makes a point that maybe the kneading for bricks takes a lot longer, and therefore you're interfering with the Bnei Rishos Rabim longer than necessary, as opposed to Govlin Tith, the other kind, where you're kneading the clay only, let's say, for smearing on walls or whatever. You don't take that long over it. There is actually a girsa. The Rif has a girsa, avaloi lilavanim, but you're not allowed to knead clay in Rishos Rabim when you're using that clay for bricks. And in that case, that makes it clearer that the issue would be that then you're spending too long on it because then kneading clay for bricks takes a lot longer. Mishnah continues, Habona b'Rishos Rabim. What about when somebody is building in Rishos Rabim, meaning that he's building a building next to Rishos Rabim? So he can't just leave his building materials in Rishos Rabim. Hamevi Abonim Mevi. So just like we said, as far as the Zevel, whoever's bringing the stones brings them. Boina, and then immediately the one who's building has to build them. You can't leave them in Rishas Rabim. You have to right away, as soon as somebody brings a stone, you then put it in the building. The imhizit, and even in all those cases where it caused damage, so he put out the zevel, even for a brief time, but then somebody was nizik by it, or he put out the stones for a little while. And the same thing, mashalom mashahizik, he's still going to have to pay for, he's still going to have to pay for the nezer. Because yes, he has the right to use the shrabim temporarily for these kinds of purposes. Nevertheless, he doesn't have the right to cause hezek. At the very least, he should be putting up something to warn people or to steer people around, like you have nowadays. You put up the barriers or whatever to prevent people from walking through the area where you have your stones or whatever. And if you didn't, then you still hire for that. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, no, you're not chayav to pay for your nizokin. And in fact, after the sakana was malachtel, Reb Shimon Gamliel says that actually you would be allowed to prepare your materials over there for 30 days ahead of time. So according to him, fakir, you're allowed to start putting them in Rosh Hashanah and start getting them ready for 30 days before the building begins. Different understandings of what masakin means. You actually understand the word masakin can mean to fix them, which would mean, in other words, to actually shape them or whatever, or it could mean to prepare them. You actually understand that means just to prepare them so they're already ready from beforehand. You already kneaded the clay, you already shaped the stones and so forth, and it's just a matter of having them ready. And Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah will say you'd be allowed to for 30 days ahead of time. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn, and then on the other hand, actually, the Torah Chaim learns that it means actually that the word Masakin means to fix them, that according to him, you would actually be allowed to keep them there in order for them to get fixed. You'd be allowed to put out the Zevil so that people step on it and so forth, and it becomes prepared, so he'd be disagreeing with the first part of the Mishnah that said, Mazabel, you have to right away use it for fertilizer, or Shimon Gamliel would allow you to leave it there for 30 days in order that it becomes prepared and ready for use, in the same way he'd say as far as the building materials. So the Gemara starts off, Lema Masnissin Delekta Rabbi Yehuda. Do we have to say that the beginning of our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda? The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, the Sha'asai Tzvasis Volim, during the time of year when people are normally taking out their wastes, Odom Motzi Zivla L'Rishas Rabim, a person is allowed to do just that. He takes out his zevel, his wastes, to Rishas Rabim, V'Tzovre Kol Shloshim Yoim, and he piles it over there for 30 days. Does that mean that he keeps on repiling it every 30 days so that all of it gets affected, or does it mean that he just has one time 30 days? Does it just mean that he has one time 30 days and then that's it? Now in the Sefer of our Mishnah, Rav Shimon Gamliel also allows him 30 days. If you say that it means one time 30 days, then it comes out that Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying basically the same thing as Rav Yehuda. Otherwise, it would mean that they're arguing Rav Yehuda would allow him for 30 days, and Rav Shimon Gamliel would allow even more than 30 days because he just says that every 30 days he's turning it over. Anyway, Kadesh Yenishif Radagla Odom of Radagla Behema, so that it gets trampled by the feet of people and animals that walk there in the street, and that helps make it into better fertilizer. And in fact, he says, Shamanaskein Hincho Yoshua Israel as the audit. When Yoshua bequeathed the land to the Jewish people and divided up among them, he made various tnoim that we learned about in Bava Kamma, and Rabbi Yehuda holds this was one of his tnoim. That people have the right to do this. So it comes out on the face of it, then our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda is allowing for 30 days and the Mishnah is saying, no, you have to remove it right away. So now, Tosfos points out like this. Why didn't the Gemara just say that the difference is Rabbi Yehuda is allowing the Shas HaTzvasis Volim during the time of year when people are normally taking out Zevel into the street and piling it over there, and then the Mishnah, so Rabbi Yehuda is talking about that, and the Mishnah would be talking about Shaloi B'Shas HaTzvasis Volim, and then we could say that the Mishnah goes like Rabbi Yehuda after all. But Tosfos says that no, it's obvious that we are talking about Shaloi B'Shas HaTzvasis Volim. But the fact is, it still can't be like Rabbi Yehuda, because the Mishnah is saying that regardless, he's chayav to pay for his hezek. Even now the Mishnah seems to be saying that you can have it there for a short time. Mazabel, fine, you have a short amount of time from when you bring it out there until the other guy picks it up and starts using it in your field. And nevertheless, the Tana of our Mishnah is being mechayev him for any hezek, whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say that he would be potter. Therefore, that would be one reason why the Gemara can't assume that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Yehuda, because even if we say it's shaloi b'shas ha'tzas zvalim, then still, Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda would say that even b'shat shaloi b'shat setzas zvalim, you still have a little bit of a grace period, not 30 days maybe, but you have something. Another way of looking at it is that in fact the Mishnah is talking about b'shat setzas zvalim, but when the Mishnah says that with so the Mishnah is saying that he has to remove it right away, that would maybe be only an Eitz HaTovah. It would be maybe good advice that the Mishnah is saying that this way you won't be chayav. But nevertheless, though, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you have full 30 days to have it over there, and you're potter from any hezek during that time. Whereas according to the Tana of our Mishnah, no, you don't have that 30 days. So there's some different ways of understanding what the Gemara's question is to say that the Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara tries, I feel tame in Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe you could even say our Mishnah goes like Rabbi Yehuda. Murder Rabbi Yehuda shame his chayv l'shalim. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda would agree, sure, you have 30 days to put it there, and you have this t'nai that Yeshua made with the Jewish people, that you're allowed to do that. Nevertheless, maybe Yeshua, when he made that t'nai, also meant, fine, you have the right to put it out there, but you still have to pay for the hezek if it causes any, if somebody gets injured by it or damages their kelim on it or whatever. But the Gemara says that doesn't really work, because v'hatnan moed Rabbi Yehuda b'ner Chanukah shu potter. We learned this in Bava Kamma as well, that we had a case over there where you have a store, and outside the store there's a candle burning, and a guy comes by with a camel load, with a camel loaded up with flax, and the flax ends up brushing against the candle and setting everything on fire. So we said, if the candle was outdoors, then the owner of the store who left it outdoors is chayev, because he shouldn't have done that. He should have kept his candle indoors. But Rabbi Yehuda says, b'ner Chanukah shu potter. Rabbi Yehuda holds, it's interesting, the expression over here, moide Rabbi Yehuda, because there's on the face of it, there's nobody that he's moide to. The Chum would say that regardless, he's chayev if it's outdoors. And in fact, Agoy Sabah takes out the word moide. So Rabbi Yehuda holds, if it's a Ner Chanukah, which you're supposed to keep outdoors, then Rabbi Yehuda says you're potter, even if this whole disaster with the fire happened. Because Rabbi Yehuda says, because he's acting with Rishus, because he's supposed to have the Ner Chanukah outside. Now, my lab, Rishus Beis Din. Now, don't we mean, in other words, that he has a Rishus of Beis Din to put the candle outdoors, because the Chachamim, knowing that there's a mitzvah, knowing that there's Pesumi Nissa, give him the right to put his candle outdoors, for Chanukah, and therefore that means any time a person is acting with Rishus Beis Din, then Rabbi Yehuda is gonna say he's potter. Well, over here, when it comes to the fertilizer or whatever that he's putting in Rishus Rabim, then Rabbi Yehuda says he has Rishus Beis Din, because he has Rishus from Yeshua and his Beis Din to do it, and Rabbi Yehuda would say that he's potter. So if our Mishnah is implying that he's chayev, then again, that on the face of it, that can't be like Rabbi Yehuda. But the Gemara says maybe loy, reshus the mitzvah. No, because maybe you could say Rabbi Yehuda is only pattering him where there's a reshus of a mitzvah involved. When it comes to zevel, there's no mitzvah to put it out in the street. The Chum allowed you to do that, says Rabbi Yehuda, but there's no mitzvah in doing it, as opposed to Ner Chanukah, there's an actual mitzvah of putting it outdoors because of Pursumi Nissa. So maybe, after all, our Mishnah could fit with Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda would say, when you're doing a mitzvah, and a hezek is caused, then you're potter, but when it's not a mitzvah, even though it's Rishus based in, then you're chayim. But the Gemara says no, v'hatanya, because we learn in a braisa, kol elo sha'omru mutorim makalko b'shos rabim, in all cases where the Chachamim said that you're allowed to cause damage in Rosh Hashanah. For example, you have, we learned in Bava Kamma, we had an example where people are allowed to open up their gutters and have them drain their rain gutters and things like that into Rosh Hashanah during the winter time, because anyway, during the winter, the roads are wet and muddy, so therefore you're not really adding to that. So all those, so it says you are allowed to do that. Nevertheless, the Braisa says, nevertheless, im hezek chayev l'shalem. If he causes hezek, then he's still chayev to pay. So yes, the roads are wet and muddy, but if he now caused that, now there's extra water over there from him draining out his drain pipe, and now somebody slips on that water and gets injured, then the Tanakama is still going to say that he's chayev. Rabbi Yehuda poter. Rabbi Yehuda says that he's poter. So we see that even as long as he has reshus based in, then even though it's not reshus mitzvah, then Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that he's potter. So in other words, we're not going to make a distinction between whether there's a mitzvah or whether it's reshus. As long as you have reshus based in, Rabbi Yehuda is going to patter him. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. Elamachvar to masnis in the loyker of Yehuda. Okay, you're right. Fear that our Mishnah cannot be like Rabbi Yehuda, because ultimately the Tana of our Mishnah is saying that even if you have the right to put it out in Rishus Rabim, and again, you have the two possibilities in Tosfos, whether our Mishnah is talking about a time when people normally do this or not. Either way, the Tana of our Mishnah is being mechayev you for whatever hezek happens, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, as long as you have reshus based in, then you're potter. So after all said and done, obviously our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda, which, as usual, we would prefer not to do, even though Stam Mishnah to Mayor, we would still prefer that a Stam Mishnah actually goes according to everybody's opinion, but in this case, we have no choice but to say it's not so. In connection with that story of the camel and the flax and the Ner Chanukah, by the way, we learned about in Bava Kamma, a sicha where the Rebbe talks about the deeper meaning behind that story over there, is that you have the setting the whole building on fire with the candle, and then the flax over there represents that a person, the flax represents Olam Hazeh, and it bulges out into the storm, meaning that a person is allowing that to overtake his entire life, and therefore the result is, if it causes damage, he's chayev. On the other hand, we can have where the flax is not anywhere where it shouldn't be, it remains on the camel, but then you have the candle outdoors, meaning that you're acting in a way like your connection to Hashem, your connection to Elikus is overpowering everything else, and nevertheless, you have to make sure that it doesn't destroy Olam Hazeh, that it works with it, and if not, then you chayev for what happens. And Rabbi Yehuda says, b'ner Chanukah potter, because by ner Chanukah, then you have chakert. It has to be outdoors. You have to allow that level of Mesiras Nefesh of Chanukah to overpower everything, and therefore, even if it causes damage, even if it damages something in your in the way that you work with in Yonah Olam Hazeh, then you can be potter because you're doing it with the enthusiasm of the kind of Mesiras Nefesh that needed by Ner Chanukah. Meanwhile, the Chum say over there, and they say in the Gemara over there, nevertheless, you're still obligated to be Yoshev and Meshamer. Yes, you have to have your Ner outdoors and let it light up everything and let everybody show everybody a real example, a real live example of Mesiras Nefesh, but you still have to be careful that it doesn't go beyond bounds and cause damage. Okay, getting back to the Gemara over here, Omer Abaya, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon, Kulu Svir Lahu, these three Tanoim all hold of the concept that we just discussed, Kol Makom Shenos Nolei Chachamim Rishus, that whenever the Chacham give a person permission to do something, they hezek, and through being allowed to do that, cause hezek potter, then these three Tanoim say that he would be potter. We have the usual rule of that when we have a group of Tanoim where we say that they all hold such and such, means it's called a shita, and ein halacha k'shita, we say the halacha is actually not like that group of Tanoim. Either because it means that we're saying only those three Tanoim hold that way, implying but everybody else disagrees with them. Or even within the three Tanoim themselves, sometimes, or however many Tanoim it is in other places, sometimes what it means is each of them says a din, which can be traced back to this concept, but nevertheless, each one of them might disagree with the other's din. Now, not necessarily are they applying it in the same way, they just all hold that there are underlying dinim that derive from that concept. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda Hoda Amaron, Rabbi Yehuda, we just said, we quoted the Braisa that said that, for example, that you're allowed to that you're allowed to drain out your drain pipe, your wastewater out into Rosh Hashanah during the winter time. And if you do, you're potter from paying because Mepnesha also Birushus. We had also what Rabbi Yehuda is saying about putting out Zevel in Rosh Hashanah, although from there it's not so clear because that could mean that he's allowed to put it out, but nevertheless he's chayav for the hezek. But in the other brisa about draining out his drain pipes, Rabbi Yehuda had clearly said that he's potter. So that's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Tanan. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel holds similarly. He says in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, I'm afna sakin was malachdo lifnei shloishim yen, that you're allowed to prepare or even fix your work in Rosh Hashanah 30 days ahead of time, meaning again that you can have your building materials there in Rosh Hashanah and be preparing them for 30 days beforehand. And the implication is now Rabbi Shimon Gamliel doesn't spell out that you potter from hezek if anything happens, but that the Gemara is assuming that seems to be the implication. Otherwise, the Mishnah should have said so. The Mishnah had said im hizik mishalim, and only then it brings Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion, implying that Rav Shimon Gamliel disagrees with the im hizik mishalim. So that's one way of understanding that's one way of understanding the diuk. And another way also is that Ramban has a shitta about this whole matter of what you when we're saying you're allowed or not allowed to put things in Rosh Hashanah. So the Ramban understands that it's like this. The Chachamim are not going to make a takona that's going to end up harming. So we're not saying that you're going to be. We're not going to say the Chachamim are going to allow you to use Rosh Hashanah for 30 days, but you're going to be chayav in the hezek. So therefore, again, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel would be saying exactly the same as Rabbi Yehuda. As long as the Chacham give you permission, then that makes you immune from any nezakim. And therefore, if he's allowing you to put out your building materials in Rosh Hashanah for 30 days, then the implication must be that you're potter during that time. So not so much because the Tana brings it after being hizik mishalom mashi hizik, but the very fact that Rav Shimon Gamliel is allowing you to put your materials over there implies that you falter if anything happens. So we see Rav Shimon Gamliel holds of that concept. Rav Shimon, where do we see Rav Shimon holds of that concept? The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Bava Basra. You have cases that discusses over there in the Mishnah. If you have two neighbors and one of them has an oven in his house, now you need to make sure that the heat of the oven is not going to damage, is not going to start a fire or otherwise damage the other guy's house. So a Mishnah describes over there. So first it talked about if you have an oven on the ground floor, how much clearance there has to be above it between it and the ceiling so that it doesn't, so it doesn't damage the floor upstairs. But now the other way around. Hoya ma'mide ba'aliyah, if you were putting the oven on the second floor, you have to make sure that there's at least 3 tefachim thick of plaster underneath it in the floor, so that the heat doesn't set the floor on fire. Over kira tevach, if it's a stove, then it's enough to have a thickness of a tevach of plaster, because a stove doesn't get as hot as an oven. The imhizik, but nevertheless, if he causes damage, if nevertheless the heat damages the beams, it damages the floor, which is the ceiling of the house underneath. Of the floor underneath, Mishalom Masha Hizik, then he's still going to have to pay for the damage. Even he has his 3 tefachim of plaster over there, but nevertheless, the oven was hotter than normal and it caused damage. The Tanakama is saying that doesn't exempt him from paying for the nezek. All it means is without 3 tefachim, the other guy can prevent him from putting the oven there at all. He has the 3 tefachim over there. Now the downstairs neighbor can say, I can't say anymore, I don't want you to put the oven over there. The upstairs neighbor can say, look, I have the 3 tefachim. But nevertheless, the Tanakama is saying if damage did end up happening, then he's going to have to pay. On the other hand, Rav Shimon Amalei Loi Omru Koshi Yoram Alolu Ela Shein Hizik Potem Alashalim. Rav Shimon said no. The whole reason the Chacham said these Shiurim, this 3 Tefachim and the Tefach by Akira and the various other numbers that it mentions in the Mishnah over there is all that he has to keep that amount of clearance, and if he does, and it was a Hezek, then he's Potter from pain. So we see that Rav Shimon holds of this concept, once you're acting in with Rishus Beis Din, then you're potter from anything that happens after that. But Chachamim figured out that three tefachim of plaster under an oven, or one tefach under a stove is enough most of the time. Therefore, you have Rishus Beis Din. And therefore, even if in one particular example it happens that it did cause hazard, then Rav Shimon is going to potter you. So we see that he holds of that concept. So he and Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon on the old all hold similar ways that when you're acting with Rishus Beis Din, then you're potter. Again, the halacha is not like any of the three of them. And therefore, in our Mishnah, you don't have your 30 days to put it in Rishus Rabim. You're not potter from any hezek that it causes. You don't have your 30 days, as Rabbi Huda says, to pile your zevel in Rishus Rabim. You do have 30 days. However, if you put it there, then you're chayiv for the nezek, and you can't be, and the same thing with draining out your drain pipes and whatever, so in all the various cases of our Mishnah and the various brises, then we're saying that you may have Rishus Beis Din, but nevertheless you have to pay. Now, we mentioned in the Mishnah about that you're building by Rishus Rabim, and you're bringing stones and you're building them, and we said that if the stones cause damage, Meshalem Masha Hizik, then you have to pay for the damage. So the Gemara brings in a little bit of detail about that. When it comes to preparing stones for a building, it goes through many hands before it actually gets built into the building. First, you have a chatzav, you have the quarrier, the one who cuts the stone away from the quarry in the mountain. Shemosel asatas, he finishes his work on making the stone, and he gives it to, and actually the chatzav doesn't shape it completely. The chatzav just cuts it away from its place in the quarry. Now, the next one comes the satas, who is the one who shapes it into the exact shape. He squares it off or whatever. So now, if he drops it while he's doing it and it causes hezek, then he's going to be chayev because he's the one currently who has responsibility for that stone. Another example Rashi mentions further on would be if the stone itself breaks, then also he's the one working on it, so therefore he'd be chayev to whoever hired him to replace that stone. Hasatas from Mosul Machamer. The next thing is after the Satas finishes shaping the stone into the shape that it's supposed to be, then he gives it to the Chamer, to the donkey driver, who's gonna load it up on his donkey and carry it to the building site. So now, again, if he drops it and it causes damage, or he drops it and it itself becomes damaged, Hachamer Chayev, then the donkey driver is the one who's Chayev, because at this point now it's in his Rishus. When he gives it over to the shoulder bearer, the one who's going to take it off the animal and pick it up and bring it on his shoulder to the building site. So if anything goes wrong, then at that point that guy's chayev, because now the idea is each one took it from the previous one and now has assumed responsibility for the stone that in itself doesn't break. And it doesn't break anything else. Next, a katef shemosel abanai. Then he gives it over to the builder, who's going to actually place it on the row of stones in the building, and then put mortar to hold it in place. Habanai chayev. Then at that point, if it causes damage, then it's the builder that's chayev. Habanai shemosel adrichol. Then you have the builder gives it over to the adrichol. Rashi explains that Adrikol is Avi Ha'umnin, the father of, meaning like the leader of the leader of the builders. So he's the one, in other words, you have the builders themselves, the individual builders are putting stones in their place. He's the one who makes sure that it's actually firmly seated in place. You have go to a construction site, you see, you'll have people over there, you have people with levels and plumb lines and whatever to make sure that everything is properly seated. So the Adrikol's job is to do that, is to make sure that the stone is properly seated in place. So now, if it falls down, at that point, Adrikol chayev, then the Adrikol would be the one who's chayev, because he's the one who's taking responsibility. Now then, we have one last case. The im hiniach ha'eben al habdimus, if he had placed the stone on the row of bricks and he had placed it properly, the hizika, and after all, it caused hezek, kulan chayov mashalim, that everybody who was involved over there is going to be chayev to pay, as we'll explain in the next couple of lines why. On the face of it, many of them are not involved right now, so we'll get back to that in a minute. But the point is, in other words, as long as the adriko was actually placing it in place, making sure that it's exactly in place, then he's the one who has responsibility. And if it falls, it's because of koichai, and therefore he's chayev. But once he let go of it, once he put it in place, now if it unexpectedly fell down, then it's not really his koyach anymore. Now all of them are partners in it, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, that we're talking about the kablonos. We're talking about where they're not working by the hour. They're not being paid by the hour or whatever. They're being paid by the job, and therefore all of them have a certain responsibility in making sure that the job gets done successfully. So the Gemara asks, "V'atanya achon chayev kolin pturin?" Don't we learn another brayta that only the last one, the adriko in this case, the last one who touched that stone, is going to be chayev, and everybody else is going to be potter? And the answer is like Tasha, kan b'schiros, kan b'kablonos. It depends whether we're talking about that they're hired by the day or the hour or whatever. Where therefore now they're not partners in it. Each one, he finished his part of the job, and therefore he has nothing more to do with it. So therefore, only the last one would be chayev, only the adriko. As opposed to if it's kablonos, then all of them are chayev where it fell later on, because all of them have a responsibility to make sure to see, since there's kablonos over here and all of them are being paid by the job, so all of them have a responsibility to make sure that it stays properly in place, to make sure that's properly seated and it's not going to fall. So the Meiri actually understands a little differently. He understands that what Rashi is saying is, when it's kablonos, then all of them are actually helping to bring up the stone and put it in place, as opposed to schirus is not so. So since they all help put it in place, then therefore they'd be chayev if it falls down, as opposed to with schirus, we would say that not. But that's on the other hand, the Nimuka Yosef says that Rashi means that, again, even though we're not talking all of them were physically involved in getting it up there, but nevertheless, since it's kablonos, then all of them still retain a certain responsibility that if it falls afterwards, as Rashi says, after all the mord la'olam, a person is chayev for any nezek that he causes, and here it's not directly from koichai of one person, it's kablonos, and all of them were involved, therefore all of them are going to have to share in the responsibility. Okay. Last Mishnah says, Shtei dinos zua gavzu. If you have two gardens, one above the other. So when we say above, what we mean is one is on a lower level of ground, and then you have like a vertical wall of dirt between them, and then on the higher level, above that cliff of dirt, is another garden. By Yerek Bentayim, and you have vegetables growing between them on that vertical wall, on that vertical cliff between them. So the question is who it belongs to. Reb Meir Oymashal Elyon. Reb Meir says that those vegetables belong to the owner of the upper garden, because after all, the vegetables are rooted, the ground over there, that cliff of ground, is underneath his garden, and he owns it all the way down until the bedrock. So therefore, Reb Meir says that cliff of dirt that it's growing out of belongs to the owner of the upper garden. Therefore, he has the right to keep those vegetables. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, says it belongs to the owner of the lower garden because it's growing over his airspace. The airspace of his garden extends all the way up to the sky, and these vegetables are growing in that airspace. Well, I'm a mayor, so the mayor says, how can you say it belongs to the guy who owns the lower garden? If the owner of the upper garden wanted to remove his dirt, if he were to dig out the dirt over there, the dirt that makes up the cliff, and make his garden on the same level as the lower garden, ain't kanyerek, then there wouldn't be any vegetables over there because they're rooted in his cliff of dirt. So therefore, you have to allow him to keep the vegetables. Omer Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda counters in Yirtzah Tachton Amalas Eskinosei. On the other hand, you could argue the other way around. If the bottom one wants to fill up his garden with earth and make it equal in ground level to the top one, then also in Tanyerek, there also wouldn't be any vegetables growing over here because they need the air in order to live. So each one of them is able to prevent the vegetables from growing. So therefore, so the bottom one has rights to it too. Exclusively. Omer of Meir, so the Meir says, fine, I hear your point, but look, it's true, either one could prevent the vegetables from growing. So really, what we have to consider is where are these vegetables living from? Where are they actually rooted in? They're rooted in the dirt of the upper garden. So fine, it's true, Rabbi Yehuda, you're saying the bottom one could fill up his garden with dirt and prevent the vegetables from growing. But after all, that's not really where they're getting their life source from. They're getting it from their roots. And the roots are in the upper, are in the ground that belongs to the upper guy, and therefore he should have the rights to those, vegetables. Omer of Shimon. So Rav Shimon says, I'll tell you like this. We make kind of a compromise. Any part of the vegetable where the one in the upper garden is able to stretch out his hand and be able to take it, then it belongs to him, and the rest of it belongs to the lower one. So Rashi explains that Rav Shimon basically holds like Rav Meir. He basically agrees. Rav Meir is saying that the vegetables are growing from the dirt belonging to the upper one. Therefore, the upper one is in fact able to take it, but whatever he can't reach of it, necessarily we assume that he was mafkir to the bottom one, because it would be a gnai to him, Rashi says, Rav Shimon says, it would be a gnai for him to go and have to ask the other guy permission to go into his field or into his garden and be able to take it. So therefore the one on the higher level is mafkir it and saying, not really mafkir, literally, because he's not making it hefkir, but in other words, he's giving it away to the other one and saying, fine, you can keep it. So according to Rashi, in other words, it comes out that Rav Shimon basically agrees with the mayor, but he's just making this point about that since the top one is going to be embarrassed to ask for permission, therefore there comes a point when he's moichel to the other one. There was a Gemara earlier on Daf Kuf Zayin where we learned about a case of a tree that grows right on the border of two fields where we have a case that Yachloiku, and Tosfos compares that with this case over here. The difference is there you can't really say that either one has the ability to prevent it from growing, but you still have basically the same idea that we talked about over there, that you go according to, you look at how much of it is growing in his property, and the rest belongs to the other one. So, and we said over there that you go according to each way, each one, however it go, with wherever the fruits or the roots are in either direction. And Shmuel had said to begin with Chokin, so Tosfos compares that with that case over here and says in a similar vein then that the Rav Shimon is saying similar to Rav Shimon over here, that we're going to divide it because there's a limit how much he can take. On the other hand, that Ramban learns differently. That Ramban learns that no, Rav Shimon is basically agreeing with Rav Yehuda. In principle, they should all belong to the guy on the lower garden, but Faket. He's going to figure, I want to stay on good terms with the other guy, and if I demand all of the vegetables, then the other guy's tack is going to take away his dirt, and there won't be any vegetables there at all, and therefore it's in my interests to allow him to keep some of it. But basically, we would say, so that's why we would say, therefore, whatever the one from upstairs can reach, then he's allowed to keep, because we can assume the one downstairs is masculine to him, because he wants to keep on good terms with his neighbor and avoid that his neighbor should end up taking away the dirt. And then the rest of it belongs to him. Okay. So there's actually, in Topshin Chavvav, that ever made a hadron on Masechta Bava Metzia, and he was talking about over there in various details that we learned in our perek, the sicha that I quoted the other day about the case of Abayis Valdiyah Shanoflu and Yerushalayim Shomayla and Yerushalayim Shomata came from that sicha. It was actually from a bichol of chassidus from the Tzemach Tzedek. So now the Rebbe talks about over there. There's another one from the Tzemach Tzedek, which is printed in Ora Torah, where the Tzemach Tzedek analyzes our Mishnah, the Pnimis in Yonim. So the two gardens that Tzemach Tzedek starts by saying represent Gan Eden Elyon and Gan Eden Tachton. And so what we're talking about over here is that you actually have. Then we're also talking about the nefesh of a kiss and the nefesh of a hands. So each one has a claim on what's in between over there. You have what's hanging there in the air between the tov and the ra. So klipas noga basically. So each one has a claim on it. The Yerek, he goes on to explain. Now the tanubim, everything, all the pleasures of olam hazeh are called Yerek. For a couple of reasons. First of all, you have, he says, the word Yerek itself, if you can rearrange the letters in a few different ways. You can rearrange it, you have the word Yerek, which means vegetables or greenery, but you also have the word Yoker, which means precious, and then you have the word Keri, which means like Tumas Keri. So what it represents is when a person takes this Yerek and eats it, what is he going to do with it? Like it talks about in Tanya. Either he can be eating at L'shem Shemayim, and then he turns it into Yoker. He turns it into something which is precious to Hashem. Or he fails to do that, and then he makes it into carry into something which is tumah. Another point also that Tzemach Tzedek makes over there is the color green itself is sort of an in-between color. You have the extremes of color. You have white, which represents chesed, and red, which represents gvura. And now you blend the colors together, and you get an in-between color of various kinds of colors that in between, one of which is green. So again, the green there represents something in between. It represents klipas noga. So now the mayor and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing. What are we going to do with this yerek? So the mayor, where mayor is maloshin ha'ora, he says that if you're able to illuminate this food with the asora ma'amoris, which the world was created, then it means that you're elevating it all to the higher level, and therefore so it goes to the higher one. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shal Tachton, he doesn't mean obviously that he wants it to go into the realm of Tumah. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that, look, not everybody is capable capable of being on that level and recognizing the asora ma'amoris in something. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying, Rabbi Yehuda Oymer Shal Tachton, meaning, in other words, it's enough. All it has to be is that you bring in the Asara Ma'amoris. You may not bring it into the whole totality of the food, but at least you're bringing it into the lower level of it, and then therefore you can raise up the rest through that. And Rabbi Yehuda continues like this. It's one thing, fine, if you're on the level of Yud of Meir, where you can recognize from Hashem's point of view, from Das Elyon, that the less Asar Ponimine and everything that everything in the world is dependent on the Dvar Avaya, well then you can say it's Shel Elyon. But not everybody is capable of that. Not everybody is able to see the other course in everything. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, Meloshen Hoida, he's saying, unlike Meir, which is where the course is illuminating and shining clearly in this, I'm not, but whatever. Many people are not necessarily on that level. They're only on the level of Hoida. We can recognize that the course exists, but we can't really perceive it. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, Shel Tachton, then therefore you have to work on it from the bottom up. You have to work on doing avodas habirurim. And then we continue over there. We have to see mehechan yerek sechai. So the mayor says, fine, but at least you recognize from where this food comes from when you're eating it. Do you at least keep in mind that it comes from Hashem? And then Rav Shimon comes in and says, Kosha Elyon Yochel Lifshitas Yodeh, etc., where he's saying basically that, look, when you're eating itself, what exactly are you having in mind? If at least you're able to have in mind while you're eating that this food comes from Hashem and it's there for you to do Avodas Habirurim with, and it's made from, and it then continues to exist by virtue of Motza Piyavaya, as long as you can reach that point, Shel Elyon, then you're able to elevate that part of it. Vashaya, whatever you can't, Shel Tachton, may have to remain in the lower parts of it there, because you're not going to be elevating it there. And he explains also you have when each one is saying if you fill it up with dirt, if you take away the dirt, meaning in other words, like Rabbi Yehuda is saying, if you just fill up your stomach with dirt, meaning that you're representing over there, you're just gonna fill your stomach without any intention to serve Hashem, then ein kan yerek, then the vegetables over here are not doing any good, they're becoming keri rather than becoming something of kedusha, and therefore you can't have that. And he and the mayor go back and forth on that point, where Meir says, on the other hand, if you take away the dirt, if you're going to think there's no dirt there in the first place, meaning that there's no koyach aliki over there in the first place, then also ain pan yerek. So he explains the whole Mishnah in that vein, and he explains also that this vertical wall of dirt between the two vegetables represents, since he started by saying that the two gardens represent Gan Eden Ne'arim, Gan Eden Ne'tachten, talks about in Sifrei Kabbalah and Chassidus that there's an omod, there's like a pillar between them through which the neshamas go from one to the other, and this vertical wall over here represents that pillar. So the Gemara starts off. Omar Rabba, the Ikroi. Now, when it comes to the Ikroi, it actually says means the roots. When it comes to the roots of the plant, Kula Amalei Pligi de Elyon Havi, everybody's going to agree that belongs to the one who owns the upper garden, because there's no question those roots are in his dirt, and you can't say like Rabbi Yehuda that they're hanging over the lower one, because they're not. They're in the ground. Ki Pligi ben Noifai. The Machlokas is strictly about the leaves that extend above ground. Rabbi Meir Sava Shodi Noifai Basi, right? Rabbi Meir holds you're going to make the foliage, the leaves are going to depend on the roots. If the roots belong to the one up, to the one on top, and they definitely do, then the mayor says the leaves have to follow suit. But Rabbi Yehuda Sava Loyam and Shodi Noifa Basa Ikrei, whereas Rabbi Yehuda holds we don't say it. Rabbi Yehuda holds we don't say that. And the Gemara says they're both going according to their own shittas or different gear sets. As on the side of here, the Marshal says actually that the gear set should be Tanya Nami Gabi Mekachomemka Kihai Gavna. We learn a similar thing when it comes to buying and selling the Tanya. We learn about in a Braisa regarding Mekachomemka. We know the Gemara talks about in Baba Basra that when a person buys a tree in somebody else's property, so unless he buys a certain number of trees, 3 trees, then normally he's not buying Kautha with it. He only owns the trees themselves, but not any of the land under or around the trees. So the Mishnah says there, Braisa rather says there, Hayotzim in a Geza om Nashoshin, you have over the years shoots, little new branches grow out of the tree. They can grow out of the trunk or out of the roots. Rav Meir says they belong to the owner of the ground because they're considered they grew from his ground. Rav Yehuda says it depends. Minageza shabala ilan. If they grow from the trunk, then they belong to the owner of the tree because he owns the tree and therefore he owns anything that grows out of it. Minashoshin shabala karka. But if it grows from the roots, then it's considered that belongs to the owner of the karka because it grew from his ground. So we see that everybody agrees that the roots belong, that we see that the, so in other words, in effect, when you have something growing from the roots, then it's considered a new tree that's growing over there. Rashi brings here from the Gemara and Baba Basra, where exactly do we draw the line? What's considered the trunk? What's considered the roots? The point being, in other words, that we're saying that when it grows from the roots, it's considered a new tree. Well, you only own one tree in this property, not two. Therefore, the owner of the land gets to keep that newly grown tree, as opposed to if it grows from the trunk. So we see the machlokas is basically, does the trunk follow the roots or not? So therefore, when the mayor over there says that it does, and Rabbi Yehuda says that it does not, then they're being consistent with their respective opinions over here. Actually, Tosfos points out that it's not really exactly the same thing, because after all, there you have, when it comes from the trunk, then it is true, it's grown from the trunk. On the other hand, the fact is, it is not only it's hanging over his airspace, like in our Mishnah, it's also it's getting nourished from his ground, unlike in our Mishnah, where its nourishment is coming from the dirt from the upper garden. And also, to begin with, when he sold, he only intended to sell the original tree and not new trees that start growing from there, even if they grow from the trunk. They're not necessarily considered a branch. They can be considered a new tree. So therefore, said Rabbi Yehuda, so we're not saying it's exactly the same thing, but it's similar. And the same thing with Rabbi Meir. We're saying that even if Rabbi Meir had held over there, that if it comes from the trunk, it belongs to the owner of the tree, fine, that would be no different than, for example, the way that we can say that the branches that grow from the tree over the years belong to the owner of the tree. It's not necessarily that. So not necessarily would Rabbi Meir have to say over there, in order to be consistent with here, that it would all belong to the owner of the karka. So the Gemara is just saying that it's similar. It's not really exactly the same thing. So in fact, in that sicha of Tavshin Chabav, the Rebbe analyzed this a bit al pi halacha and comparing and contrasting this with this case that we learned previously on Daf Kuf Zayin about a tree that's growing exactly on the border, where again, one difference being, in other words, that's here in our Mishnah, we can talk about that either one can prevent the plant from growing, and there you can't really do that because it's growing on the borderline, and neither one has the ability to take away the dirt and prevent it from growing. And the Rebbe brings over there in the Siyum that the Yerushalmi, in fact, equates the two halachas and says Yachloiku by both of them as opposed to our Gemara. The Bavli doesn't take that view, and then in the end, the Gemara is going to say over here the halacha is like Rav Shimon. So we see that Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, when it comes to that dinner, Mekah HaMemker, are saying something similar to what they say over here as far as the vegetables growing between the two gardens. We also find a similar thing. The Tanya, really, it is. We learn a brisa similarly when it comes to Orla. A brisa says, Ilan hayotzim ashoshin. When you have Ilan hayotzim hagezom ashoshin, a tree that grows whether from the trunk of the old tree or from the roots of it, chayav ba'orla, is considered a new tree, and therefore you chayav an orla divid ameir. Rabbi Yehuda omen hageza potter. Rabbi Yehuda says if it grows from the trunk, then you potter because it's considered a branch of the old tree. Min ashoshin chayav, but if it grows from the roots, then you chayav an orla because then it's considered a new tree. So there is in fact a gusa in Rishonim that has that Rameyer would say in this case that if it grows either way, Rameyer would say that he's potter. In any case, the point is again that Rameyer is not distinguishing between the roots and the trunk, whereas Rav Yehuda is. And the Gemara points out with Srifin. Now we need them to tell us they're machloikas in all these cases, or in both of these last cases. Again, Tosfos points out that when the Gemara is going to do the tzrichos over here, it's not bringing in our Mishnah, because the fact is, as we said, our Mishnah is not really exactly the same as the other cases, because over here we have the dirt versus the airspace belong to two different people, whereas in the other cases we're talking about the tree as a whole belongs to one person, and it's only a question of whether it's considered to grow from the tree or from the dirt. So it's not exactly the same thing. So the Gemara knew we have to have the machlokas in connection with our Mishnah. But the question is, why do they have to have the same machlokas as far as Mekah HaMemker as well as far as Orla? So the reason is, the Iyashmin and Kamaiser, if we were only told their first machlokas about Mekah HaMemker, you would say, Baha Ka'amar of Yehuda, you know why there Rabbi Yehuda says that if it comes from the tree, then it's considered part of the tree, and if it comes from the roots, it's considered to belong to the owner of the field, the Mishum de Mamona, because it's a matter of Mamon. So therefore, you don't have to be machmer on him and say that if it comes from the trunk, you should say that it doesn't belong. Avagabe Orla de Isurah, but when it comes to Orla, which is a matter of Isur Vehetzer, Ema Modulay Lidam Mayor, maybe he would agree with the mayor that we have to be machmer and say that this, and say Machumra, we should consider that you have to, that's Chayv in Orla. The eat by Baha, if you only had the machlokas about Orla, you would say Baha Ka'amar Rameyer, only there. Does Rameyer say Lachumra that you have to consider that it's Chayav and Orla, Avabahi? But when it comes to the matter of the Mekah HaMemker of buying a tree in somebody else's property, Ema Moedele Le Rabbi Yehuda, maybe we would agree with Rabbi Yehuda that in that case we can distinguish between whether it grew from the trunk or from the roots. So therefore we need both of those machlokas. We said in the Mishnah, Omer Reb Shimon, or Reb Shimon Omer, Kol Sha'olin Yachalu Shekhola, that Reb Shimon had said, whatever the one from the upper garden is able to reach out and get belongs to him, and the rest belongs to the lower one. So again, according to Rashi, means he basically holds like Reb Yehuda, and says that he basically holds like a mayor, rather, and says that the upper one should be able to take as much as he can, but whatever he can't, he doesn't want to have to bother going, he doesn't want to have to bother the other guy and go into his property and take some of it, so therefore he's master it, therefore he's moichel it to the other guy. And according to the Ramban, the other way around, Reb Shimon basically holds like Reb Yehuda, and Reb Yehuda, on the other hand, would say that he still wants to keep good relationships with his neighbor, so his neighbor doesn't take away the dirt and prevent the vegetables from growing at all, therefore the lower one is master it to the upper one. So the Gemara says, Ami Dvei Rav Yanai, they said in the Yeshiva of Rav Yanai, Ovovad Shalor Ovovad Shalor Yanois. Now that only applies as long as he doesn't have to force himself, or whatever he can reach, then fine, but not if he has to stretch himself more than normal, then we're saying that no, at that point, we don't say that belongs to him anymore, because it means whatever he can reach normally. So, boy Rav Onan. However, Rav Onan asked the question, the Tamer of Yumia, or some say Rav Yumia asked the question, Magil and Nofe, the Magil and Ikroi, what about if he can reach, according to Rav Shimon, if he can reach the leaves, but he can't reach the roots, Magil and Ikroi, the Magil and Nofe, or the other way around, he can reach the roots, but he can't reach the leaves. Rashi explains that the leaves are hanging downward, what would be the din? And the answer is teku, we can't be sure. Agoris Agura points out that a number of Rishonim, that Rambam, the Rosh, take out these words. There's no question that the second word is Magil Ikri, but in Magil Noifo, there's no question if he can reach the roots, then he's entitled to it as it is, especially if we say that Reb Shimon basically agrees with a mayor, and we said already that the roots, everybody agrees, belongs to the upper one, so therefore there's no question if he can reach the roots, then he would in fact be entitled to the whole thing. The question is only if he can reach only the foliage, if he can reach only the in fact, the Rosh points out the question that, look, the Gemara could answer that, look, Reb Shimon is saying that as much as he can reach, then he's entitled to keep, or he can reach the leaves, so therefore that should be Shaloi. So the Tosfos Reed explains that basically whatever he can reach is considered as though he's planted in his garden. The question is, since he can only reach the leaves and he can't reach the roots, can we consider that it was actually planted in his garden or not? And then the Beis Yosef gives a different answer. Given that, again, Rashi is saying Reb Shimon's reasoning is based on the idea he's too embarrassed to go into the other guy's property and ask for permission to take it. Then there's going to end up being an argument between them that, look, you know, the leaves were further down. So even what if he says, you know what, fine, I'll set aside my cupboard, I'll go downstairs and ask him for permission to take the whole thing. So now he takes what he could only reach, what he can't reach directly, then the other guy was going to say, that, you know what, you came into my property without rishus and took it, and it's going to cause friction between them, so therefore we assume that he's not going to do it in the first place. So that's why we're saying teku, that we're not sure whether he should be entitled to. Okay. The Gemara finishes off. Omer Ephraim Safra, Chamida Shor Shlokish, Mishru Mishlokish, Halacha Kerem Shimon. Ephraim Safra, a Talmud of Rish Lakish, said in the name of Rish Lakish that the halacha is like Reb Shimon in our Mishnah, that whatever the one from the top can reach, he's able to keep, and whatever he can't reach belongs to the one below. The Gemara said, Amrua Kamei the Shabu Malkum. They told over this discussion to Shabu Malka. Shabu was the king of Persia. He's mentioned in a number of places in Shas, and we find that he was very friendly to Jews. And we find also in a few places in Shas that he was an expert in dinim of Torah. At various times, he had learned things of Torah, and he became an expert in them, and he was knowledgeable in them. So now they told him this. Now the question would be how you're allowed to teach. You know, in general, you're not allowed to teach a goy divrei Torah. So the Maharat Chayus gives an answer, and others give an answer as well, that this is a matter of dinim, which goyim are. Which goyim achayev and dinim as well. It's one of those shevim that's been in Noya. So therefore, you have a right. Therefore, you have a right to teach them. So they taught him this concept, and he was very impressed. Omelahu, he tells them, Apirion Namti, a little Shimon, our chain, our favor should be extended to Reb Shimon, meaning that we appreciate him for holding that way. He made a very sensible compromise. Now Rashi brings an explanation that some Rishonim earlier than him learned that, this answer, by the way, that you're allowed to teach him halacha because of dinim, the Maratz Chayim says it, but again, Rabbi Yonis and Eidoshitz says it before him as well. But Rashi brings another explanation that Shabu Malka over here really refers to the Amurah Shmuel. Because, Shmuel, we find in a few places, the Gemara nicknames Shmuel, Shabu Malka, in the sense, just as much as Shabu was the king of Persia, so Shmuel, Lahavdil, was the king in Torah. However, Rashi says that no, it doesn't really work over here. Shmuel knows our Mishnah perfectly well. And to have to say that the halacha is like Reb Shimon, also Shmuel doesn't need to be told that. Shmuel is perfectly able to understand on his own that the halacha is like Reb Shimon. So he'd have no reason to praise. With that said, the fact is there are Rishonim who learn that it means Shmuel, and maybe that Apirin Namti, a Reb Shimon, does not mean Reb Shimon in our Mishnah, but rather Rish Lakish, who he says came to the Kohen, Reb Shimon, Rish Lakish, his name after all was Reb Shimon, then Lakish, and it means that Shmuel is praising him for coming to the correct conclusion and paskening like Reb Shimon in our Mishnah. In connection with the explanation before from the Tzemach Tzedek about the two gardens and the and Elyon and Tachton and all of that, the Tzemach Tzedek finishes off saying that when we have over here in the Gemara that it says that they told it Hame Shabu Malka before literally means ahead of also. So he explains that Shabu Malka represents Shviras HaKeven. Shabu Malashim Shvira. So it means, in other words, that we're talking about that when a person is on the level, when a person reaches a level of before Shvira Sakelin, he connects himself with Torah, which exists, which was created before the world, and therefore before Shvira Sakelin, with that he's going to be able to bring in, to elevate these Yerokos, to bring them up to the highest levels, and therefore the Gemara finishes off Apirion, Malashim Thuruhu, that he makes it that now there becomes an outgrowth from his yerek, from what he's working with this world, and makes it into a keli for elikus, and to grow and create peiros more and more. Period. Hadron alach abayis valiyos slikol a masecht above metziah.